much for having me here. Oh yeah, I have to start low.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Fields Institute. Okay, I have hidden nothing under the blackboard. Okay, no magic will be happening. Okay, so thank you for having me here, and I said that already. Everything I will be saying is for type A. And I will rely on some of the things that a lot of people have talked before, but I will try to be self-contained as well. So it's dual in the sense that I rely on everything that people have said before, but I'm self-contained. There is no paradox here. So, Alistair yesterday and his talk with the following diagram, so this is more or less where I will pick up. He showed us that the cohomology of the flag manifold was isomorphic to what he called Rn plus 1, and this is by definition the polynomial ring over Z, n plus 1, mod out by the symmetric function. Let me put a plus here, you know, degree, removing the degree zero of the symmetric function. Well, I could actually, it was better the way he put it. He put that you take the elementary symmetric function E1, E2, up to En, n plus 1 in this case. So he said that this Rn plus 1 is that quotient, and Liviu also showed us for arbitrary type, so this is why I say type A, so I'm back to type A, so down to type A in his talk. And then there was that interesting map going here. And then isomorphism, and then interesting map going here. And that, the map he described here corresponds here to setting xn plus 1 equals 0. So you just set xn plus 1 equals 0, and that was what he geometrically constructed there. So he showed that this commuted. And he made an observation, he said really quickly, well, we just go to the limit here, and then we go to the limit there, and then what corresponds to the Schubert cell, the closure of the Schubert cell, so what he called a U, which was the cohomology of view checked here, is stable under this going to n infinity. So here there would be a polynomial that corresponds to there. So the existence of that polynomial is not that obvious. So this is what I want to do is I want to take the image here and see that there is a polynomial, not a class. So Liviu in all his talk was saying about a basis for this quotient, which was a class. Okay, we do class, but it's interesting to have stable polynomials, so things that when we multiply, we don't have to do mod symmetric function. We can just do the multiplication, expand in terms of that basis, and then we will get those coefficients without doing mod. So the algorithm is much more efficient in type A. So this is one of the beauty of having a stable thing. So this will work only when we have, you know, it does not work in type E, say, because we don't have stable observation. And a second thing that Liviu talked about is those delta operator. So the divided difference, here I will denote them del. And they have some analog geometrically. So how all this was proved by BGG and also de Mazur, I think should be quoted there, is that... Well, Megumi last week, it's already long gone, we forgot it, showed that there are some inclusion, you know, like if we have U less than or equal in the Brewer order to V, and even more particularly, if I have U and then I multiply on the left by the simple transposition SI, VI, so the simple transposition SI corresponds to what Liviu was referring to, the simple roots, the reflection about the simple roots. So here, if I go up in the Brewer order, if the length go up by 1 when I do that, then I will have that the Schubert variety XU is included in the Schubert variety SIV. And then this kind of inclusion, you know, will, what will happen here on this side under this inclusion, and that will be the divided difference del I. So you have to go through the whole process here, and then here you just say, oh, the del I. And then after that, you can forget where it comes from and just, you know, deal with those operators and just forget the other side. So here is what I will do is, now we forget about this side. So sorry, geometer. At York, they give us really, really hard chalk. They never break, but they don't write either. So now I'm not used with those chalk. I think I will break many, many, many chalks. So let's be used to that. I used to throw them too, but just give me a box, a present. Thank you. So the first thing that we have to do in the context of Taipei, first of all, is to define those operator del I, which goes from the polynomial ring to the polynomial ring. I'm even tempted to go, let the number of variables go to infinity and forget about, you know, anything, but, well, that's not. Because as I say, what I'm interested in is the limit when we go up to infinity. And this operator is simply, like Liviu gave it to us, is if I apply it to a polynomial, f, I just do f, and then I subtract, let me be explicit, I transpose the variable xi and xi plus 1, so I apply the transposition to f, and then I divide this linear operator in those variables here, that is basically xi minus xi plus 1. So, yes, but it's supposed to be this. Thank you. So now we have, this is the divided difference explicitly in the context of type A, of type A. And then it's sheer computation. You just check that if you do del I square, you get 0. If you do del I del j, it's del j del I. If I and j are far away from one another, meaning the difference is just bigger than or equal to 1, strictly bigger than 1. And if they are close, if they touch one another, then they satisfy this relation. So this is just checking. It's mechanical. And once you check this, then for any permutation, which is the Weyl group of type A, so for any permutation W in Sn, then it is known that you can go through any reduced word. So if you have a sequence of simple transposition, A1, SI2, SIK, if this is not reduced, it is known that at one point you will have to use SI is equal to the identity, so the operator will act as zero. But if this is reduced, it is known that you can go from any reduced expression to another reduced expression just using those two relations of the simple transposition. So the operator, if you have W and you write W as a sequence, and if this is reduced, so meaning it's the smallest possible number of simple transposition to write W, then del W defined to be SA1, SA2, SAK is well defined. So this is, I'm just recalling what we have just seen, but in the context of type A. Then, with this quotient, what happened is, what I have forgotten is that I can go through all the bases that we had for the cohomology, you know, the the sigma u, we start at the top, and then we can go down the Brouwer order and then cover all the permutation by using paths. So we are in the Brouwer order, so we have the highest permutation, W0, and then we can start going down. Oh, let's write a typical symmetric group. So this is S3. So we can go down by a sequence of operator, del operator like that, and a reduced word is a path in that order. And here, if I want to go from here to there, there are two paths. I just took one, and then the operator will be the same. So here I can do del 1, del 2. So del 2, del 1 is for this permutation. And that's the fact that I have this correspondence there is just telling me that if I want to go from, if I want to have a basis of Rn, so basis of Rn, I start with the class of the top degree, which corresponds to sigma of W0. So this is you remember from last time that the degree of the dimension of, there was a correlation between the dimension of the Schubert cell and the degree of the polynomial that we get on this side. So the correspondence there, essentially the degree is multiplied by 2, the dimension is divided by 2, or there is a multiple of 2 like this. So the top degree on Rn plus 1, or the top degree in Rn, in that quotient, it's known to be x1 to the n minus 1, x2 to the n minus 2, dot, 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 xn to the n minus n, which is 0, and that is the this is more or less, it's not exactly the product that Liviu gave us. He gave us the van der Mond determinant in the case of type A here. So, but you can, instead of taking the full van der Mond determinant, we can take just one monomial. This is one representative. And then I can start applying the del I operator, so del 1, del n minus 1, and you know, generate a whole basis in this way. Okay, so that's the idea of what we want to do for type A. Now, but Alistair last time, yesterday, hinted the fact that there should be a polynomial, not a class. Here I'm talking about a class, and then I will have a basis which consists into class. But yesterday we were hinted that there should be a polynomial that represents that class in a nice way. So that's the idea of Lascaux and Toussaint-Berger, essentially. So Lascaux and Toussaint-Berger just said, instead of talking about the class, let's look at the polynomial that we get by applying those operators. So we define the Schubert polynomial W to be the operator I think it's W0. I have to take omega 0 W. I forgot if I have to put a minus 1. I have to put a minus 1 somewhere. Why? You remember, Alex, if we have to put a minus 1 somewhere? Or it's just this one? You're so helpful. You think it's inverse, yeah. Then xn minus 1, x1 to the n minus 1, x2 to the n minus 2, xn to the 0. So I start with this monomial, not the class. I take the monomial, and then I keep applying those operators. Now you, then you say, this is a polynomial. Now you start showing nice property about this polynomial. So first of all, you have to show things like, this polynomial is stable. So it's exactly what will stabilize if you go up to n minus 1. So stable means that if you go, if you look at the polynomial, the permutation under the embedding from Sn inside Sn plus 1, if you have the permutation W and then you map it into, I will call it W here by abuse of notation. So if you have the same, if you have a permutation that's fixed n plus 1, then maybe I can say, no, I don't want to say that. Then the Schubert polynomial that you will compute here, if you were to compute it here, will be mapped. Well, it's bad notation, but the Schubert polynomial that you compute inside Sn, so using that n, you see this depends on n, but if you compute it here, it will be the same thing. So let me put a prime here, and then I would just say you will get equality with prime. So if you compute the Schubert polynomial in Sn, or if you compute it in Sn plus 1, it's always the same. So this is the property that you show. You have to show that. So that essentially shows that those are exactly the polynomials that stabilize under this reverse thing. And this will be the equivariant. So when you go let n go to infinity, the equivariant polynomial that represents that class. And because you let n go to infinity, what you will have is you will have that the set of all W, where W now I will denote it in S infinity. So here is you can permute finitely many variables, but your numbers go to all of n. That this set will be a basis of the ring Z x1 x2 up to infinity. So in that ring. And now if you want to get the quotient, you just let some variable goes to zero. Now if you want to get the basis, or if you want to get some stuff, you just let some variable go to zero. So that you do all your computation up here, and then when you want to actually get some results, then you just go down, and that will give you the result down there. And the interesting thing, well, there are more properties about the Schubert polynomial, is, for example, if you have R, the last descent of W in S infinity, you know, all those things are polynomial. They are not series or anything. So they are polynomial in a certain number of finitely many variables. They are not polynomial in infinitely many variables. They look like polynomial in infinitely, but they are not. So if you look at the last descent of W, this is, you will have that the Schubert polynomial W is in fact a polynomial. I never put the variable, you notice, because it does not really, there are infinitely many variables, is a polynomial in the variable x1, x2, xr. So that the last descent tells us, you know, what the polynomial looked like already. Thank you for the buck. I think I'm going through all the trucks. I will eat it. Yes. Yeah, W0 is the top. It's the longest permutation. Okay. So, some more property. 3. Let me see what I'm not following my note already. I'm bad. Oh. Yes, I've done that. Okay. Yeah, that's really nice property of the Schubert polynomial. Is, if you look at the definition, and I want to point it out here. If you look at the definition, I'm applying divided difference to a monomial. And if you look at the divided difference, there is a difference here and then a division. So in general, lots of negative and positive signs should come in. But the beauty here for the Schubert polynomial of type A is that, in fact, the polynomial, well, they expand in terms of the Artin basis, the monomial, the decreasing monomial. That's what Alistair told us yesterday. But here, in this case, what they will look like, let me just put alpha here. Alpha is a sequence of exponents, alpha 1, alpha n, alpha r. I think of r being the maximum number of variables. And then there will be some coefficient, b of w, alpha, x, alpha. Here, whenever I write x to a sequence, I just mean x1, alpha 1, xn, alpha n. And those numbers, we know that they are integers, but the first surprising fact is that those numbers are non-negative. So these are in Z plus. They could be zero, but they are never negative. So this is a first surprising fact. Some people even say, oh, that has nothing to do geometrically, but we kind of have even gave a geometrical interpretation of the fact that those were positive. But this is not really relevant here. That's not what I want to do. But I will come back to the fact that those are positive. The fourth property that I want to mention, and here I'm slowly gearing myself to another fact that Liv you mentioned, which is Monk's formula, which is the type A Chevalier formula. So, you remember the Liviu gave us a rule on how to multiply two Schubert classes, or how to multiply two of those representatives. And then here, what I want to do is this is half of what to do. And half of what to do is, if I multiply a Schubert polynomial corresponding to a simple transposition with a Schubert polynomial corresponding to a W in general, let me use here K, sorry, SK, then this will be the sum over, I need my notes, I will, for not messing it up, it will be the sum over all R pair R K strictly less than S. So here, I'm thinking about the transposition RS. So what you have to have is the length of W, R, the transposition RS. So this is not a simple transposition. It's a transposition that has jump. The length of this is equal to the length of W plus 1. So the length of W, this is W. So I'm looking at the transposition that makes the length go by exactly 1. The length go up by 1, by multiplication on the right. And then you just sum the polynomial W, R, S. So that's, the coefficients here are always 1. Before, you had a more complicated expression for this coefficient in other type. Here, I want to mention something. Liviu told us that this and another fact led to combinatorics. Well, I want to say no to that. Usually, write back what you said. You also said, well, if I also know how to write a Schubert polynomial as a polynomial in the generators, those generators were those polynomials in of degree 1. So, in SR, then if I know this and that, then I can recover all the multiplication structure. Well, first of all, knowing this, he didn't give us the formula. We wouldn't want to have a formula to express this. This is the analog usually with the old geometer would say there is a Pieri and a Giambelli formula. We need the two formula in order to recover the structure. Second bad thing is that this will have lots of negative terms. And we know that when we make the product, we should get positive terms. So this is not a combinatorial formula. It has lots of negative. It's a polynomial. In general, you will have, some positive and negative coefficient. How come when we actually finish the multiplication, we end up with just positive? So for combinatorialists, it's really bad that it does not explain positivity. When we have a combinatorial rule, we want to explain the fact that we get positive number. So I would just say that those two provide an algorithm to multiply Schubert polynomial, but not a combinatorial algorithm. So it's a computer algorithm, you can plug it in the computer, I agree for that. But when you said combinatorial algorithm, then this is probably why Alex looked back at this, was not happy. Okay, this is... Well, I was not happy. So, you know, like even doing that expansion, have you explained how to do it? No, you just say, oh, that expansion exists. You have to recursively do it. And it's not easy to recursively do. So this was just a parenthesis that I wanted to mention. Okay, where am I? Okay, so one of the big problems that I've been talking about is that because of where it's coming from, when I multiply the Schubert polynomial corresponding to U with the Schubert polynomial corresponding to V, then I will be able to rewrite this as a linear combination of Schubert polynomial corresponding to W, U, V, and W, and W. That comes from the fact that it's a basis. You know, when I multiply two basis elements, I'm able to rewrite it. And if we remember well where we're coming from, we forgot it. But if we forget again and we just look at this, those numbers are integers. They are nothing more than integers. They could be negative. But now if suddenly we remember where we're coming from, then those numbers are positive integers. And the reason they are positive integers is that they have a meaning. They are counting some stuff in the geometry side. But I would like to be able to do it without the geometry, because the geometry could be difficult to actually compute. The reason we do all of that is to have, you know, efficient ways of computing those integers. So I would like to have a rule, a combinatorial rule, that gives me those integers. What we just said here, if I know how to express any Schubert polynomial in terms of the generators, and then if I use that formula, that will give me an algorithm to compute those integers. But that algorithm does not exhibit whatsoever the positivity of those integers. Or in fact, when they are zero or not zero, which is an interesting question. Alex mentioned, you know, oh, we are interested to know when this is one or when this is blah, blah. So we are really interested to have a handle on what is the value of this integer. So we would like to have a set that we construct, and then when we count the element of this set, it's that number. So that's what I would like to call a combinatorial rule. Short of that, it's just an algorithm. Okay? So that is the Holy Grail. In the sense, for Schubert calculus somehow, there are some announcement, but I have not seen any real concrete rule for that so far. Question? I would like to say yes, I think, but probably there are some that you don't know. Oh, you probably know, want to have something like, no, they don't determine. You want to have something like the leading term of this is equal to, you know, like some kind of property like that. And it's true. One thing that I have not mentioned that is true with three, I can say that the leading term of Schubert polynomial indexed by W is the what we call the code of the permutation. You count the number of inversion to the right of. I will come back to that. But no, they don't determine. You have to kneel. But they are really close to determining completely the Schubert polynomial. Another thing that I want to mention also is that in the proving that this is isomorphic to that, the way Alistair did it, he said, oh, we have the generator, so the generator was the Chern class, x1 up to xn plus 1, and then we have the relation. He didn't show the relation. He just said, they satisfy the relation ek of the blah blah is equal to 0. That, you know, requires some work. Another strategy would be to show this formula on the left side in geometry. That's what Monks did. You know, that is called Monks' formula because this was shown geometrically on the left side. And then you show that the two rings, you know, satisfy the same, have the same generators and the same relation. So that's another strategy instead of appealing to the EK. And this can be shown independently on both sides. So you can show that geometrically, you know, just playing with the matrix like Megumi was starting. Those matrices are beautiful. You just can play with them and understand what is going on explicitly geometrically, and then you do that algebraically, and you just note, oh, the two sides satisfy the same recurrence. So that's another approach to show the isomorphism between the two. Okay, so just a small interlude. I just said that this, we don't know the answer, and Alex mentioned at one point, oh, but for some cases we do know the answer. For example, in the Grassmannian. So that story has a successful story in the case if we restrict ourselves. So there are some successful stories if we restrict ourselves not to all flag manifold, but say to Grassmannian. In the case of Grassmannian, those the analog of the Schubert polynomial. I don't want to go through all of that, but these, there are a subclass of permutation that we call, I forgot, not vexillary? No. Is it? Did I say it? Whatever. That we call something. And that subclass will give us sure function. So for certain class of permutation, so for V, oh, Grassmannian. So where am I? Yes. If V is Grassmannian, so meaning that it has only one descent at most, one descent. Well, if you don't know what the descent of a permutation here is, if you have V, which is I list the value V of 1, V of 2. Well, let's say, well, it goes on like this. So those are the value of what is V of 1, V of 2, and so on. And then we say that V has descent at R if V of R is strictly bigger than V of R plus 1. And that's what I meant by as last descent, so it's the largest R possible for which this happened. So if we have a permutation that is Grassmannian, then in fact V can be encoded by two things. If you think of a permutation, if you draw the permutation, so here you put V of 1, you just put an X, we used to put 1 at V of 1, and then V of 2. Well, if it let's say this is not the descent yet, so we put a 1 here, and then we go on up to V of R, and then we will have a 1, and then after that we will have V of R plus 1. I'm drawing the kind of matrices that Megumi was drawing last time. So, we have a descent. So here we have I should not put it exactly at the same place. We have a 1, and then, and then we cannot have other descent. So this 1 has to be filling all the columns that we have not used so far. So from this point on, to not have other descent, if we want to have only one descent, then we should have 1 in all the columns that we've missed. So we will have a 1, so here, a 1 here, and then let's say here that was a column. So I will have a one here, and then that's the last column that I missed, a 1 downstairs, and then 1 all the rest. Now, if what I see out of that, if I were to do the kind of thing that we were doing the other day, if I were to put 0 all to the right and 0 below, and so on, so same thing here, 0 to the right and 0 below, 0 to the right, so here, blop, 0, and then 0 below, we see that from this point on, the matrix will be filled with 0 and 1. Above, we will have some space, and those are the inversion of the permutation. And the number of the number of star that I have in one row is completely embedded in the star that we have in the next row. If I have a star here, I will have star there as well. So the number of star increase. So what I see here is a partition, lambda. You know, lambda is the number of star that you see. So if you give me lambda and r, I can recover v. If you give me a v, I can find a lambda and an r. So a Grassmannian permutation is completely determined by a partition and an integer r that is strictly bigger than the length of the partition. So v is, we will denote that by v square, lambda and r. So this is the data that you need for a Grassmannian permutation. It's indexed by r, and since this is the last descent, we know that we will have a polynomial in x r. So r tell us, you know, the number of variable, and lambda tell us something about the structure of the permutation. And those, that data, what happened, what I want to say is that if you compute everything, and you can show that independently, is that the Schubert polynomial corresponding to V, lambda R, is in fact a sure function in the variable x1 up to xr. And this identity is in fact reflect the fact that if we were to go back in what we don't want to think about, if we go back to geometry, the flag, we had a map to every flag, we can map it to a Grassmannian. So in fact, for the cohomology, we have an inclusion of the cohomology of the Grassmannian inside the cohomology of the flag manifold. And that's how this inclusion is expressed, is we have some subclass. It's a nice inclusion, is that I can just restrict myself to those sure functions, and that's the inclusion of the Grassmannian inside the flag manifold, or the cohomology of the Grassmannian inside the cohomology of the flag manifold. So if I restrict myself to this class, then this problem is completely solved. The problem of multiplying sure function, if I have the sure function S lambda in the variable x1, xr, times S mu in the variable x1 up to xr, I have to fix my r. The r is important here. This tells me which Grassmannian I'm talking about. It's the r Grassmannian. Will be equal to some linear combination C lambda mu, nu, S nu in x1 up to xr. And in fact, how we solve this is we forget about geometry, we forget about algebra, we go into, we let the number of variable go to infinity, we solve this, and we have a rule from representation theory or from algebra that tell us how to find those numbers, and then we forget the one that do not correspond to r. So yesterday, the parallel between representation and geometry, they were a little bit lying when they were putting the two formula and saying that they were the same. They were not the same formula. One formula involved more terms than the other. So when you go from from representation to geometry, you have to forget some terms. And this is something Alex pointed out when he said, you know, finding when is that 0 and 1, in geometry and in representation, it's not the same, exactly the same question. So it was solved in representation theory by Stanbridge, but not in geometry really. And okay, so when I say we have a handle, we know how to construct that, is we have some kind of combinatorics of sure function. So what is the combinatorics of sure function? We know that sure function, if I let the number of variable, I can let the number of variables k to r, is equal to the sum of function that goes from lambda to 1 up to r. We call those tableau. So here I see lambda as a set of coordinates. You know, like you may have seen, if you give me a lambda which is equal to 3, 2, 2, I wrote them in decreasing order, weakly decreasing order, then I can, by abuse of notation, I also see lambda as a set of coordinates in n cross n. And the way I draw this is that we draw boxes. So this is 3, 2, 2. I'm using the Cartesian coordinates, and I just draw a box. So yesterday you saw the matrix coordinates system where all the tableaux are drawn upside down. But here they stand, so I prefer not to put myself upside down and start looking at those things. And then you put some kind of x to, well, we put a monomial here that depend on the tableau, that depend only on the tableau, and that monomial is in fact the product of all the coordinates that are in lambda. So for every box, then you put xi to the value of the tableau at x. So this is one monomial. Often some people will say just x to the weight of the tableau, or whatever, or the monomial of t, or whatever. So for every tableau like this, and you require one more property, it's not all those functions like that, you want this function to be weakly increasing along row and strictly increasing along column. So here, I would say that semi-standard. So semi-standard means T semi-standard, if and only if T of ij is less than or equal to, if I look coordinate like this, T of I plus 1 j. So if I travel along a row, it's weakly increasing, and if I travel along a column, it's strictly increasing. So this is what we mean by semi-standard. It's weakly increasing along row and strictly increasing along column. So the first thing about the combinatorial of sure function is I can write sure function as weighted sets. You know, you give me a set of objects, the semi-standard tableau, and then for every one of those objects I associate a monomial, and that's how you construct the sure function. For the general problem, it's promising. There should be some combinatorial construction of Schubert polynomial in general. So that's the first thing about doing the combinatorics of Schubert polynomial. The second, once we have done all of this, and this requires some work and so on and blah blah, then the second thing is, okay, the second thing we want to understand the multiplication. So somehow we want to have some kind of rule that give me two of those objects, how do I combine them to make a bigger one? So how do I do insertion rule, or, you know, like some kind of rule that allows me to glue, to fudge those two objects together and build one, a bigger one. And this is, you know, we get the lambda mu nu as nu. And this equality would come up from, you know, you give me a tableau that has this shape, and then a tableau P that has this shape, and then you would like to, here I'm schematically doing it, construct two objects, you know, I would write Q and some other tableau, so PT, whatever, S, where this will be a tableau of this shape, and this is some kind of object. So you would like to have some kind of rule that allows you to go like this. And this is how one can show can construct those coefficients. This will be the number of those objects that are different for the same of these things. So that's the combinatorics of that. And now, if we want to solve this in general, one approach, I'm not saying that it's the only one, but one combinatorial approach is to first find some kind of combinatorial object to describe the Schubert polynomial, and then describe a rule that allows you to combine them in a nice way. And this is the first part has been done in many ways, but the second part is still quite open to my taste. One thing that you should be aware of is that there's nothing that says that it should be semi-standard tableau. There are other candidates for sure function. And in fact, if we want to go to other type, then you have to start deforming your tableau or whatever, and some other people prefer to use here Littleman path or, you know, puzzles, or there are many kind of objects. Those objects are not necessarily unique. And depending on what kind of object that you get, you would get a different combinatorics of the number that you get. And for example, if we use semi-standard tableau here, semi-standard tableau, even with this insertion, does not exhibit nicely all sort of symmetry that we get out of those numbers. Those numbers should have some symmetry. Of course, if we permute those two, we should get the same thing. But there are other symmetry. If in fact, if we start playing around those numbers, there are some ways of playing around those partition, and we get symmetry. And this is what is nice with what the presentation that Alex gave us at the first time using those puzzles, is that those puzzles exhibit other symmetry that were not exhibit with this insertion. So starting with other object is good. We get different interpretation of those numbers that may exhibit more symmetries or less symmetry and so on. But each of those construction pays, give us something at the end. Six. The all sort of permutation of those. So Knudsen shows, you know, a cyclic symmetry, but you can have does not show this one. There is one of them that is not shown by Knudsen, that is shown by other. There are, you know, if you use those kind of triangle in puzzle, you can show all the symmetry, but you can not using the same one all the time. So no, not that I'm aware of. And that's something that would be nice to have. Okay, so for Schubert polynomial, let me at least give you one that I have to... Well, let me tell you a little bit of the history of that... of having one combinatorial rule. So the goal here, the goal, the two problems to do is A, to find some objects. So find objects. So we can call them, did I give a name? A set of objects that could be indexed by W, that depend on W, such that the Schubert polynomial of W will be equal to the sum of all D inside this this set of objects, and then X to the weight of D. And property 3 there tell us that it seems conceivable. It makes sense to say that. There is no sign. It's positive. So it's conceivable that such a construction exists. And B... well, use it to show our, this is for Megumi. So it was a sun. So show it to show our light, our shining gold of showing this. And so I want a few words about A. So A, there are many potential candidates, but I cannot say that any of those candidates is the candidate or a good candidate so far, because none of them showed the second one completely. They showed partial answers and things like that, but none of them showed the second one completely. To my knowledge, the first such thing that exists was due to Carnot. And it's a really strange rule. and it's bad somehow, because I will tell you what I mean by bad and good. So this will be bad and bad. So Carnot's rule is something like that. You remember the matrix that I just erased here, where are those stars and zeros? So you just remember the stars. So for every permutation, you construct the matrix, the Megumi matrix. It's not hers, but which was, you know, put ones and ones and ones, and then erase everything to the right and to the left, and so on. And then you will be left with some. Those are not zero. I think of them as bubbles. So that you will be left with bubbles. No, it's not one descent. I'm not just in the one descent case. I am in the arbitrary. For every permutation, you can do that matrix, and then you are left with some privileged position. And that's what we can talk. We can say it's the diagram of that permutation. We forget about the one, and we just remember the bubbles. In the position that they are. Okay? So this is some kind of diagram D, corresponding to the permutation, so it's DW. Then Carnot's rule is the following, is pick a row, any row that you want, so pick a row. Let's pick this row. Pick the rightmost bubble, and let's think that we are in a champagne glass. The bubble may go up. So, and then push that bubble up. So pick a row and push rightmost bubble up. So if this is bubble is there, then you can push it up. So you raise it and you push it up. So do that recursively in all possible ways. If there are bubbles on top, when you arrive at the top, you cannot escape. Sorry. And if you have a bubble right on top of it, it push all the bubble, you know, it tunnels the bubbles up. But the idea is just do that. So do that recursively, starting from the top, in all possible ways, and that constructs the Schubert polynomial. To a bubble diagram like this, you associate the monomial, so I have to tell you how to do x to the d, you just do x1 to the number of bubbles. X is the product of xi to the number of bubbles at row I. So you see there are some funny combinatorial construction. Do this, and Carnot's rule is essentially x of w is equal to the sum of all bubble diagrams, bubble d, and then x to the d. And that was conjectured for really long. Even a proof of that is fishy. There are some people that claim a proof of that, and the reason, that's why I say bad and bad. Bad first, because if you give me a bubble diagram, if I give you a diagram like this, is this a bubble diagram? And if it's a bubble diagram, it's a bubble diagram of which permutation? So by looking at it, I cannot determine where I'm coming from. I completely forgot everything. So this is bad. If you see a semi-standard tableau, you know this is the semi-standard tableau of shape lambda. The shape tells you which polynomial, which sure function is coming from. That kind of rule is really bad. You don't know where you're coming from. You don't know where you're going. That's the first bad. The second bad is it's really hard to prove. That's the second really bad. So this rule is bad, bad. So this is, but it was the first, you know, attempt in doing so. So this is why if you start to understand why people are thinking, people in combinatorics, sometimes they are crazy. What are they doing? What is that? I don't understand anything. Well, this is for things like that. We started to be successful only when we started to generate, you know, good rule and good stuff. I also came up right after that, when it was so bad that this was not proven, I came up with another rule that was also bad, that was more complicated to generate, and It's a little bit. It's a kind of paper that I hide under the under a carpet because I don't want anybody to see it. It's bad combinatorics. It's bad for that reason. But at least that was the first proven one. So the rule that I had, yet the proof had to be fixed at some point. And even the first published proof is not necessarily the best proof. So that's why I even hide it under the carpet in the basement. Okay, so let me give you a good rule. So, well, you start with D sub W and then you generate the set of all possible bubble diagrams that you can do with this rule. For example, if this is your... No. If you give me such a W that you obtain, so here, if we start with this, the only thing that we can do, if this is my D of W, the only thing that I can do is push that bubble up. I will obtain this. This is one other diagram. So for the D, if this is one D and this is another D, there is one monomial for that and one monomial for this. Okay, so the monomial, the X to the DW is equal to X13, X2, X3 square, and the D for this one is equal to X13, X2 square, X3. And then you sum over all possibilities. I didn't want to spend too much time because it's a bad rule. So, let me erase it. To my taste, one of the most fun rules that came up was the RC graph. So that was due to me and Billy. So the BB, so Sarah Billy. And contrary to some of what a lot of you may think, this is not due to Fomin and Kirillov. I mean, this is out of the Billy Jakosh Stanley formula. And with Sarah, I was working with her already when we work on that Billy Jakosh Stanley formula, and this is how we got this. So Fomin and Kirillov kind of did another kind of picture, which was wavery, but it's really coming out of what we were working out. So just so that I set the record straight. So we call that RC graph because it was from reduced compatible graph that came from the BGS paper. So there is something, you know, how do we prove that, how we came to that, was not, you know, Fomin and Kirillov. So what you do is the following thing, is you look at all the I will say it's diagram again, that is a subset of N cross N. And for, if you give me such a diagram, so I will draw a little picture here, and you put some cross. So this is, you put some cross according to certain position. So you will put, so let me be draw a nice picture. So you put a cross here, you put a cross here, you put a cross here, and say you put a cross here. Okay? And then you do what now they call pipe dream. I like the name. Why not? It used to be a reduced compatible. So everywhere there's not a cross, you put that kind of a piece. Oops, I should piece it up neatly. And everywhere there is a cross, you cross. So you here, you put that piece. Here, you cross. Here, you put that piece. Here, you put that piece. Oops. Here, you put that piece. Here you cross, here you put that piece, I will try to do it faster, here you put that piece, you cross, put that piece, and up, you cross, put that piece, put that piece. And here, at the end, you see the sea, the ocean, because it's all wavy. You know, after that, it's the ocean. If you look really far, you see the ocean, and it's beautiful. That's why I chose blue. No. Well, that diagram, I can see right away if it's what we call reduce or not. This diagram is not reduced because the two strands cross twice. So this is a bad example. Let me remove this one. Okay? Okay, so now nothing crossed twice. Okay? So for something like this, we say that D is reduced if no strand cross twice. So that's what reduce means. And then, clearly we can read the permutation associated with that. There is naturally a permutation associated with that. If you give me the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, there is an obvious way to map to every reduce graph to associate a permutation. So W of D equal, in this case, 1 goes to 1, 2 goes to 4, 3 goes to 2, 3, 4 goes to 3, 5 goes to 6, and 6 goes to 5, and then 7 to 7, and then it's fixed. I naturally have a permutation associated to it. So this is good. then the theorem is that, well, is that the Schubert polynomial is a sum over all D reduce such that the permutation of W is W. The permutation of D is W. And then, again, you count the number of crosses at height I. So this is for the product over all ij in D xi. So this is a good rule. It's not too difficult to prove. We can prove it. It's easy. If you give me any diagram, I can recognize the permutation it comes from, and I did what I claim I did. It's good and okay. Because you want to do more. You want to be able to do that. And if you are interested, we started to try to do that. And we were able to recover this rule nicely. So this rule can be proved using this. So it's good, good, and okay. So we can prove it, it's good. We can recognize diagram, it's good. And we can start proving things with it. This is one thing that you want to have with a combinatorial rule. It's to be able to prove things like that. And some people, they pick up on our work and then was able to go a little bit further and then prove, you know, an analog of multiplying by a Pierre rule. But then after that, it crashes. So then maybe we need more, different, better object. There are some now in the market, there are some other object to do that. But this is what we are looking for. This is what combinatorics is asking. Combinatorial object that gives construct the polynomial and after that insertion rule or combinatorial rule to fudge the object together and build give greater one. Okay, thank you. Well, each time it's a bijection game.
I mean, can you see the bubbles?
No, absolutely not. One cannot prove bubble using this, to my knowledge. It's really difficult. Maybe some people, I think Jason had some kind of idea on how to do that kind of thing, but I didn't see it. But this is a direct translation of the reduce the BGS rule. Okay, it's just a graphical representation of the BGS rule. in general, you know, even, you know, if you may ask the question, oh, if W was Grassmannian, this should correspond to Tableau. And then how does it correspond to Tableau? You know, there are some of those diagrams are in fact Tableau, and how do I see Tableau? Yes, it corresponds to Tableau. What you have to do is pull back, you know, those crosses among, you know, try to pull them up. There is a way to pull them up, and then you pull them all up, and then where they are coming from is the entry of the Tableau, and then you have to invert. So there are some rules like that. But in general, the bijection rule, the bijection game is not an easy one. It could be really difficult, and even among all for the Littlewood Richardson coefficient, for this here, the bijection game about all the polytop interpretation is not trivial. Postnikov and other people kind of did that, and it's interesting. That's one way of showing all the symmetries. It's going through all those polytop interpretation, and then saying, oh, the easy bijection from here and here, okay bijection from here and here, and then I can follow all those bijection and show all the symmetries.
Are there any other approaches?
Yes, there are other. Yeah.
Which are good rules or?
Some of them don't use insertion, so they're not good for me. I'm kind of an insertion. I want to have some kind of Robinson-Chernstein insertion. The insertion that we defined with Sarah on those kind of things to prove Monk's formula was, if we restrict ourselves to Tableau, was Robinson-Chernstein insertion. So it was kind of a generalization of Robinson-Chernstein insertion on those kind of objects, and it was beautiful and promising, but unfortunately, it didn't work. So I'd like to see something like that. This is my personal taste. But it starts to be a question of taste. The first one that does it will be, you know, the winner. That's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question because, yeah, it makes sense to ask and see. One would have to frame it nicely. You know, it makes sense to multiply every row of a partition by a certain length. So, you know, like, I didn't think of that question, and now one would have to come up with how do we expand those cones. We don't even have a polytop interpretation of those numbers. We don't have any interpretation. The saturation conjecture was natural in the context of those polytop interpretations. Yes, exactly. So, yes, it's a good question. Thank you.